Hey, this is Johnny Rabbit. We're at your service in KMOX. And we've got some guests here today I think you're really going to enjoy. Starting off with two. I almost decided I couldn't figure out who else to get. I was going to make it Couples Day. But then I couldn't find it. You're the leading couple of St. Louis.
All right.
Andy Hahn and Valerie Schremp Hahn. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Ron.
Thank you. Thanks for the invitation.
Of course. And you're close to your house. The Campbell house. I guess it is your house, so to speak.
Well, it feels like I live there sometime. Yeah, you can see it out the window here.
Yep. Campbell House Museum. Tell us just a little bit about the Campbell House. There are a lot, if you want.
Sure. I've been working there for over 20 years.
My gosh.
And it is a restored Victorian townhouse here in downtown St. Louis at the corner of 15th and Locust Streets. And it's the last vestige of a neighborhood, a street called Lucas Place. Today we call that street Locust Street, but it was Lucas Place in its day. 19th century guidebooks describe it as the Fifth Avenue of St. Louis.
Hey, pretty snazzy.
Yeah.
And your Campbell House is the end of it. I mean, the end of the line for
It's the end of it. It was the first house built, and it's the only one left.
That's interesting.
It's been the only one left for almost 100 years,
actually.
Was
it 1851?
1851 it was built, exactly.
Oh, boy. What a great place that is. And there, I know people, just like when we were going in the air, you were saying somebody, I don't know who it was, how do you listen to the radio?
Our daughter said that.
How do you listen to the? That's very scary.
Yeah, we told her we were coming on this today, and the kids both said, why? And then we told them how to listen to the radio.
Oh, very good. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. New listeners all the time. It's pretty interesting. But then how do people come and see the house? I know a lot of people have. A lot of people have gone many times, but there are a lot more people who have never been. What do you have to do?
Yeah, we hear that all the time, unfortunately. We're a hidden gem, but we like to think that we're the type of museum that really gives visitors a flavor of what St. Louis is and was. So we've been open for over 80 years, and we're open regular hours, Wednesday through Sunday. You just park in our lot and come to the door and ring the bell, and someone will give you a tour.
Well, the house has been there since 1851. So what happened? What is sort of the context of time frame? 1851, the Campbell family?
No, the Campbells actually didn't build the house.
Oh, they did not?
No, it was built as a real estate speculation, but they moved in just 3 years after it was built.
Who was there first?
A man named John Hall, and he never lived in the house. He built two houses, one right next to each other at the same time. And then he sold the house to a woman named Cornelia Wilson, and her maiden name was Hempstead. And she came from an old St. Louis family. And interestingly, she owned the house outright herself.
Hmm.
Her husband's name was not on the deed, and we think that was her family's attempt to shield their wealth from her husband. And then the Campbells bought it a couple years later. So they lived there for 86 years.
My gosh.
Yeah.
And then when did it become a museum? How did it become a museum?
Well, for many people, that's the most fascinating part of the story. The last Campbell, a reclusive, interesting old man, 80-year-old Hazlett Campbell, died in the house in 1938, and the doors to the building were literally flung open. For the first time in many, many years, people who lived and worked in the neighborhood called the house the Mystery House.
Hmm.
It was the only one left on the street. They knew the Campbells lived there, but no one had seen one in a long time. It was maintained. And so that got people really excited, interesting about what does the Mystery House look like on the inside.
Of course.
And that started an effort to preserve the house. And this was kind of the beginning of the historic preservation and movement in St. Louis. The Field House was being saved. The riverfront was being torn down, and so there were people starting to get interested in St. Louis's buildings, especially at that time, in the late 1930s, early 1940s.
Now, I've noticed in your very nice newsletter, which does that go out every month to members or how do people?
Yeah, it goes out to our members and friends. We put it out about 3 times a year, yeah.
And one of the first items was something that was donated that had been purchased at an auction.
Yes, so what really kind of the catalyst that got people excited and moving to save the house was the fact that in December of 1940, it was announced that the entire Campbell estate, all of their property, their physical stuff, was going to be sold at a public auction at the old Ben J. Selkirk's Galleries, the auction house.
Sure.
And they had 5 weeks notice of that auction. Oh, and boy. So they went, they had to raise money through public appeal and buy as much as they could. They raised about $10,000. And they bought a lot, but they certainly didn't buy everything. And thankfully, many of those objects bought at that auction by other St. Louisans have been kind of remembered. That story, history has been preserved, and periodically they come back to us.
Oh, that's right.
So we just got four earlier this year.
So when somebody comes to the house, what happens? Do they come in? What's the entry? Is there a front door, back door, side door?
We have a front door and an accessible door on the 15th Street side.
Where do you park?
You park on our parking lot. Mm-hmm. It's free. And you come in the front gate, just like the Campbells would. You go up the front steps. If you can't use the steps, you go around to the side.
Okay.
And at either door, you ring the bell and someone greets you and welcomes you in and takes you on a guided tour. Everyone who comes gets the It's a guided tour. Well, they walk. It takes about 45 minutes. They walk you through the whole house.
Oh, good.
And, you know, give you that kind of one-on-one history, that story, which we think is special.
It is a great story, a terrific story. It's something that everybody should be familiar with and get to know the Campbell House. You do a lot of other events and things there. And the neighborhood has changed. The YMCA is no longer the YMCA. What, it's a hotel now?
That was a dramatic change. So the YMCA left, they were our next-door neighbors for 90 years, from 1927 to 1917. They moved further east downtown, and it was unclear for a few years what was going to happen to this huge building. Yeah. And thankfully, a developer came in, and it has been, they spent, I think, over $60 million redeveloping the old Y building as the new 21C Museum Hotel. So perfect neighbors, and we couldn't be more excited about it.
Why do they call it a museum hotel?
Well, it's a small boutique chain, and part of what they offer, not just their visitors but or their guests, but the local community, is the fact that they have public galleries and museums that are open 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
The couple that started this hotel has an enormous contemporary art collection, mm-hmm. and they had so much art they had nowhere else to put it. So a friend suggested, why don't you start a hotel and then you could put the art in the hotel?
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. Oh, so they have a regular, the hotel has a, quote, museum department. Individuals whose only job it is to deal with the collection, to create exhibits, all that sort of thing. So they just opened a new exhibit a couple of weeks ago and they have rotating exhibits, and it's really, really exciting.
So you can see two museums in one block.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly, right next door to each other.
That is exciting. General American.
And they could have a drink afterwards.
Yes, they have a bar or a coffee shop, whichever you like.
Good, not a bad idea, Valerie. General American Insurance Building, life insurance building, that beautiful white terracotta structure with the weather ball on top.
Correct, yeah. That's across the street.
It's not General American is long gone, but what's in there?
So that's across the street. General American was in there for about 50 years. They left in 1977. And about 25 years ago, it was redeveloped as the Terracotta Lofts.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to live downtown, there's a whole stretch of lofts all over. But on Locust Street in particular, the 15th, 16th, and 1700 blocks, there's quite a few lofts. And at the end of that stretch of lofts is a new building that's just been redeveloped as the Victor, the old Butler Brothers building, which we talked about.
Giant building.
An entire city block. Yeah. Yeah, it is enormous.
Warwick Hotel is now a parking lot, I guess. That was the one just to your east?
No, it's actually Confluence Academy. It's not that the old Warwick building is gone.
Warwick is gone, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That was next door, but it's Confluence Academy.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, we'll come right back. I want to talk to you about a book that you've got coming out.
Great.
And then we're going to get to you, Valerie.
That's
Don't
fine.
Go away now.
That's
we'll
fine.
Be right
no.
back. This is Johnny Rabbit. We're at your service, and you're listening to, and I know you can find it. It's easy to find, I promise you. It's KMOX.
Real issues that impact your life. No polarizing politics, just relatable conversations. The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Let's get back with our conversation. I'm Johnny Rabbit. We are at your service, and we're headed down to the Campbell House Museum. Actually, if we could easily walk there. It's three blocks away or something.
We could.
Today, it's open, too.
We are. We're open every Sunday, open the doors at noon, and Last tour begins at 3:30.
So right there at the southwest corner of 15th and Locust.
Correct.
The Campbell asked me and said, what does it cost if somebody's coming over right now?
It's a deal. It's $10 per person. Includes parking, admission, and the tour.
Wow. 45-minute tour approximately. Now you got a book coming out.
No. Oh, I do have a book. I thought you meant you have to book the tour. No, I do have a book.
You had me scared for a second. Like, wait a second. Hold on. A new book, brand new book called Mapping St. Louis, A History of the Gateway City in 40, count them, 40 rare maps.
That's correct. It's my first book. I've had this book in my mind for a very long time. I've long been a lover of maps. They have a power of drawing you in and, at least for me, captivating me and holding my attention. And we're very lucky that we live in a city that has an unbelievable variety of maps charting our growth and our history. Mm-hmm. And each one tells its own fascinating story.
I was mentioning Jody Sowell from the History Museum was on Channel 4 this morning with his weekly history report talking about the Compton and Dry map or book.
Yes, the 1876 Pictorial St. Louis is its technical name, but most people know it as Compton and Dry, named after Camille Dry and Richard Compton, the two geniuses who brought it together. And that's certainly in my book, and it is still to this day the largest panoramic map done of any city anywhere in the history of humanity.
My gosh.
Yeah. If you put all 110 plates of this map together, the map itself would be more than 16 feet wide.
Oh, my.
So that is quite a map.
That is quite a map. That's pretty darn amazing.
Yeah.
You'll have it. How big is it? How many pages?
The book's about 175 pages. And like I said, like you said, it features 40. It was very hard to choose, but 40 maps that date from the earliest days of the city, 1767, all the way up to 2021. So
this is a pretty big book, big in format size, so you can read the maps.
It's 12 inches tall, so it's it's big, and people should. That was one of the things that got me excited about this project to do a book that really allowed people to get into a bit more of the detail of the maps, because not only do I feature the full map, you know, the unadulterated map, so to speak, you know, not cropped or anything. But almost every map will then take, every section will take a piece of that map and blow it up even bigger so you can get a more detailed view of some aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. Now, the book is not out yet. It's coming out when?
End of September. It will be released. It's published by Reedy Press, a local publisher who specializes in local history, not just St. Louis history, but they do local history books all over the country. And
Josh Stevens, we've had him on before, and it's really a great company, great what the work that they do. And so you're in good hands with Reedy.
Yes, I agree. They've been wonderful to work with.
This is a hardback book, too, which is good.
Yes, yeah.
Now, you've got an event coming up when you introduce the book?
We're having a book, a kind of a release event. It's on October 20th. No surprise at Campbell House. It's a Sunday afternoon at 3:00. People can come down and get a copy of the book. And then I'll be speaking all over St. Louis. I've got talks at various historical societies, Carondelet, Afton Historical Society, at St. Louis Public Library. If you look on Reedy's website, they should have all those listed.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good. But that is important to get out to see people. And have. Will you have the book for sale?
Of course, yeah. And most of them will do a kind of a presentation, kind of giving people an introduction and highlighting parts of the book.
Mm-hmm. When did you start working this book? You know, it doesn't just happen overnight. How long ago has this been?
Well, I've had the idea for the book for better than a decade, but I really started working in earnest about a year ago, or a year and a half ago, I guess. But the writing was pretty focused. I mean, I did most of the writing in about 10 weeks.
That's good. That's fast.
Yeah.
And I assume, Valerie, you were his editor?
I proofread a lot. And then
She proofread it all. She's my best editor.
You disappeared into the office for a long time, and you're the more, he's very focused. I mean, I don't have that kind of focus. I sit down for an hour and wander off, but he was very focused.
I'm glad to hear that June, your nice puppy, that is listening to us today. That's also reassuring.
Yeah, was good support for you.
And Valerie, your background, well, the first time I heard about you was Corazon Academy, 1991. And what a show. What a production. What was that show?
Oh, it was this play called Last Chance High, and your daughter Amy was in it with me.
Yes, she was.
So we go way back, and it was a silly play about a group of misfit high schoolers, and she was the mean school principal that got us all in line.
Well, she'd be good at that.
Yeah, you know. So from... We've come very far, I
think. Last Chance High. And you had a mohawk, you said.
I did. I had a mohawk. I played some misfit character, and it took a lot of Aquanet to get my hair to go up on the mohawk, but yeah.
That's funny. Now, your writing career, when did you start writing? When you were like 15 years old?
I started at least published writing when I was 15, and the Suburban Journals, RIP. Suburban Journals had this contest called the Opinion Shapers, and you could submit a column, and you could be on a panel of columnists to write a column four times a year. And so I did that from when I was 15 till I was about 21 and got a job at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, which...
And you were there for a long time?
I was there for 26 years. And then, sadly, I left in June 2023. It was kind of a emotional, tough decision, but I got a great offer to be an associate editor with the Catholic Health Association of the United States, which is based here in St. Louis and in Washington, D.C. And we put out a monthly newspaper called Catholic Health World. So... I'm still doing writing. It's a different type of writing for a different type of audience, but it's still interesting stuff, and do some editing. And I'm working for a former editor of mine from the Post-Dispatch, Lisa Eisenhower, and she kind of lured me over there.
Oh,
so I'm working for a boss and who I work well with. And
that's terrific.
It's great. Yeah.
Well, that's what you're working on. Where does this go to hospitals or?
Yeah, it's mostly, it's targeted toward like hospital executives. Mm-hmm. And it's more like we write about the Catholic hospital system throughout the United States and also a little bit worldwide. But, you know, like Mercy and SSM are based here. And
yes.
Ascension is actually based here, but they don't have hospitals here. But other big systems like Common Spirit and Christus and Providence that are on different parts of the United States and, you know, write about different programs and fun things they're doing. A couple weeks ago, I interviewed a heart surgeon who transplanted this new type of artificial heart into a patient for the first time. And I'm thinking, wow, this is crazy. You know,
just
different types of programs to help people and equity issues and environmental issues.
Terrific.
And things like that.
And you've also written for articles that were in the New York Times.
Impressive. I guess one advantage of leaving the paper is I can kind of break free to freelance. So that's what I've been doing. So I did actually, I had a couple stories in the New York Times this
one
last year.
About the World's Fair?
Yeah, one was about the World's Fair exhibit at the Missouri History Museum. So that was a lot of fun. And one was about the City Museum's contemporary art collection. So... and I pitched a couple of ideas. I might have something in this fall. I'm not sure. I'm kind of waiting to hear back from them. But
how do you find stories? Well, how do you find stories and how do people find you?
That's a good question. Well, I don't know. I just kind of keep an eye for what's out there and look at trends and that sort of thing. And I knew the History Museum exhibit was coming up and I knew that was a big deal because they were totally revamping the World's Fair exhibit that they had there.
Right.
That had been there for years and years, but they were taking a little bit of a deeper dive into the, the racial aspect of the fair and just, you know, the human zoos that they had there and that sort of thing. And just kind of laying that open and putting that discussion out there. So I knew that was coming up. I still kind of have connections and folks that I talk to.
The STL.com and STL Made?
So that's, I'm also doing some freelancing for a website called InTheSTL.com, and it's like an offshoot of Greater St. Louis, Inc. And they're doing more kind of like work to promote St. Louis as a city where you want to come and do business and try new things. So it's also more of like just positive stories about things happening in St. Louis.
Oh, that's great that you're doing all this.
Yeah,
wonderful.
It's fun.
Now, you do it all at home? You don't have to go to an office?
We do have an office at CHA, and it's out by the airport, so maybe about 4 or 5 days a month I go out
month.
There. And we have production weeks, so we print out like we have this monthly newspaper, so we print out the proofs of the paper and look at it and, you know, try to make sure we don't have any mistakes in it. We proofread this thing a lot, so.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. That you're both doing what you like to do, obviously.
Yeah,
that's wonderful.
Great, yeah.
You can't ask for more than that.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
You really can't. And this Mapping St. Louis book is going to be, I think, a very big hit and the right time for Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
Folks at Reedy, they know how to market.
They do. That they do. So we'll have you back.
Good. I'd be happy to.
Really anxious to see the book.
Good.
All right, Andy. Thank you. Andy Hahn, Campbell House Museum. Are you going to go to the house this afternoon? And
I don't think I will.
Oh, my God.
It's my day off, so I try to stay away on my day off.
All right. Well, thank you both very much.
Thank you for having us.
My pleasure.
You're
thanks for the invitation.
Welcome. Andy Hahn and Valerie Schrempf Hahn. And now we are going to hear about some plays in St. Louis from Donna Northcutt. Donna is associated with, and maybe I think she's a creator of the Magic Smoking Monkey Theater. You may not know about it, but you're going to find out all about that and a heck of a lot more. And later on this afternoon, we'll also have historian Chris Nofziger here. He's working on a new podcast. He will tell us about that. And he's also working on a book about the Lemp family. And then former CBS Radio White House correspondent Peter Mayer is going to be here. And we're not going to talk about politics at all, which is strange for him. But we're going to be talking about Granite City in the past. And today, Brad Choate from KMOX News did a really neat piece on Neon Granite City. We'll talk about all those things before 3 o'clock this afternoon, of course. I'm at your service. This is Johnny Rabbit at KMOX.
For everything St. Louis Cardinals, it's Cardinals Conversations. Use the Odyssey app or hear it on your favorite podcast platform. From game analysis, player and management interviews, it's exclusive Cardinals content from KMOX Sports, where the Redbird talk never stops.
Ah, yes, yeah, well, there are all kinds of things going to be happening on the radio today, of course, and Brad Choate will be participating in one of those later on. That's going to be in the next hour, and we're going to talk about Granite City lit up in neon, and it's, well, it's I personally haven't seen it. I've seen photographs of it. Our special guest, Peter Mayer, former CBS Radio White House correspondent for 8 million years, and he also worked for other networks, will be here. He's from Granite City. We're going to talk about his life growing up in Granite City past, and all this neon stuff that's going on. But there are a lot of strange things that happen in the news. Now, I was reading the newspaper, which I do every day, and I guess it was the day before yesterday, an article in Today in History in the Post-Dispatch. In 1969, Leno and Rosemary LaBianca, you may remember those names, they were murdered in their Los Angeles home by members of Charles Manson's cult. I know that's a name you'll remember. That was one day after actor Sharon Tate and four other people were murdered by Charles Manson and his pals. Now, that's all most people know about Charles Manson, which is pretty terrible to even know such a thing about such a horrible person. But he had great aspirations to be a singer. And he actually, well, you can hear for yourself. So I don't know if he made any other recordings that are available, but this one is, the song is Invisible Tears. That song is the biggest hit single by the Ray Conniff Singers. It's totally different than a Charles Manson sound. So let's hear the Charles Manson singing his version of Invisible Tears.
Invisible tears in my eyes, incredible pain in my heart, indestructible memory, all in review, impossible though things may get, improbable memories of sweet love of you.
Thank you. Well, that's him. That's Charles Manson. Very strange, very eerie. Somebody, Rick Wallace, former KMOX newsman, played that for me one day on the phone and said, okay, who is this? I could not have guessed who it was, and I didn't guess who it was. Very strange. I'm going to be doing a presentation. Speaking about history, this is for OASIS. What a wonderful organization that is, OASIS. And this is going to be this month, August 27th. That's Tuesday. It'll be at 10:30 in the morning. It'll run till about 11:15. And the topic is Seeing St. Louis Before the Arch, covering a lot of years, but especially the 20th century before the arch went up in October of 1965. You can make a reservation for this. There is a small fee that goes to OASIS, and you can contact oasisnet.org, oasisnet.org, or you can just show up. before 10:30, like 10:15, 10:20 or so, on Tuesday, August 27th. We're at the center of Clayton. It's right off of Maryland Avenue on Gay Avenue, which leads you right down to the Clayton Community Center, which backs up to Clayton High School. So we're on the second floor of that building. I will be there in person. I hope you could be there as well. And if you can, I know some people zoom in on us because we will be doing that. The address again is oasisnet.org. We will also dedicate that program to Mark Eisenberg. The late Mark Eisenberg was a regular attendee of my various programs for Oasis and for the Missouri Historical Society, where we've got something coming up. I'm pretty sure it's going to be in December, the annual Johnny Rabbit Lecture at the Missouri History Museum. I don't have any more details on that at this point. But Mark was a regular student of St. Louis history. He passed away on June 30th. Now, this very day, I talked about Broadway in St. Louis on our Sunday morning feature with Scott Jagow. That was at just before 10 minutes until 9. It's about a 7-minute feature that we do every week. And this week it was about Broadway, the longest street in St. Louis, which runs from South County, the only street that actually runs all the way from South County to North County. You got 19.6 miles in all. And we talked about mostly the 50s, 60s, and we took it from Market Street, which is the dividing line between North and South Broadway, and went all the way up north. We stopped at Ray Rixman Dodge, which was in Baden. We talked about strange colors of the Dodge automobiles in those years, and in these years it was documented in an article in the Labor Tribune by Kevin Weeks this week. I thought that was very interesting, but I want to give equal time to South Broadway, which is a whole different feel than North Broadway. So next Sunday morning, 10 minutes to 9 here at KMOX. I hope you can listen in, and then we'll take you to the past on Broadway. Well, every era has historians and documentarians to tell about our history. One of those people here today is Chris Knopfziger. We will hear from him by phone from in just a few minutes. But, you know, there are other ways. A lot of people wonder, where do you find information about St. Louis history? Of course, there is the library. Matter of fact, I talked to the library because I was having a terrible time finding the exact length of Broadway. I found about half a dozen different lengths. They were going up to like 33 miles, and I knew that couldn't be right. So I talked to the folks at the St. Louis Room of the Public Library, which is downtown. That's the library. I can actually see it out the window here. A beautiful place to visit, incidentally. And you want to know about St. Louis, they are there to help you. And she was so sweet. She called back, and she found the documents that the name became Broadway in 1883 by proclamation. And it blended four streets into one that became Broadway. So that's a good source for information. The St. Louis Public Library, of course, the St. Louis County Library, equally as good. And there are other places. The Mercantile Library at the University of Missouri, St. Louis, have wonderful archives. They have the entire Globe Democrat collection, anything that was in the Globe. They even have the little printout things that were cut out of the paper and filed, so you can look at the actual papers and so on. That is a terrific source. Right now, there's a lot of construction going on, so may not be the best time to go. But that's going to all be done by late this year or early next year. I'll tell you more about that. But some of the books you might be interested in, one that I use a lot for a reference in my personal library for your consideration, is This Is Our St. Louis by Harry Hagen. Another one that I use a lot, but of course, some of these things end at certain times. I think this one took it up to 1952. McCune Gill, It's the St. Louis Story, Lion of the Valley, St. Louis from 1764 to 1980 by James Neal Prim. And a really interesting book, really worth reading. It's not as much as a history book as some, but it covers a heck of a lot of history, called Catfish and Crystal by Ernest Kirsten. A great book, great resource book, and you might remember Catfish and Crystal, the restaurant. That was the last name of the restaurant. It had been the Gray Ghost at the northwest corner of Locust and 11th Street. Miss Hulling's Cafeteria was on the Locust side. Catfish and Crystal was the sit-down restaurant right at the corner, and on 11th Street, there was His Lordship's Pub. I miss those places. They were really terrific places. And for women's history, you can't beat this. In Her Place A Guide to St. Louis Women's History by Catherine Corbett. Well, I think we're going to find Chris Knopfziger here in a couple of minutes, so we're going to take a break. We will come right back. We're at your service, and you're listening to, and thank you for doing so, to KMOX.
I'm Joe Pott. This is KMOX, the voice of St. Louis.
Well, we have the voice of Chris Knopfziger about to be heard on the radio all over Mid-America on KMOX and KMOX-FM. As I'm talking about historians, documentarians, and so on, and people to tell about our history. I've mentioned McCune Gill before. Norbury Wayman also comes to mind. And today we've got Chris Knopfziger, who is, where are you today, Chris?
I am actually up in Jerseyville, Illinois, at an extremely beautiful Italianate estate. And I'm actually out in the garden right now.
Oh, how nice. It sounds very quiet, very peaceful there.
Oh, good. You can't hear all the cicadas. That's actually really good.
Are there really a lot still?
Yeah, they're actually pretty loud right now.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Chris, thank you. What are you doing there? Just having lunch or touring?
I know the family who owns the house, and they're actually having a sort of a mid to late summer get-together party for their friends.
Well, good. Well, that sounds terrific. Now, there's another good town to visit if you want history.
Yeah, it's beautiful up here. It's a beautiful county and beautiful city. Jerseyville is beautiful, and Jersey County is beautiful as well.
Oh, it really is. Now, Chris Knopfziger is a noted historian of St. Louis, but interestingly, you're not from St. Louis originally, are you?
No, I'm actually originally from Midland, Michigan, which you probably have never heard of.
I have not.
There's a larger city in Texas named Midland, which people might have heard of more. Midland, Michigan, though, is actually a very historic city. It's where Dow Chemical Company is based.
Oh.
And Dow was formed in Midland because Michigan, a lot of underneath the earth is a lot of salt water that was trapped there back, you know, eons ago. And Dow Chemical Company brought the salt water up to the surface with wells, and they extracted various chemicals like bromine, and that is how Dow Chemical began its first years as a chemical company.
Oh, interesting.
Now it's grown into one of the largest chemical companies in the world, if not. I don't know if it still has the rank of largest, but it is one of the largest. It used to always compete with all those big, hulking German chemical companies. Uh-huh. Which dominated chemicals for decades from the 19th century on.
Huh. Now, what did you, as far as getting into St. Louis, how did you decide to devote so much time to the history of St. Louis since you're not even from here?
Well, I guess it's sort of like, you know, what mountain climbers always say about mountains, because it's there. And, you know, I think, you know, I definitely became interested in, say, the Lemp Brewery because I think I went to the Châtillon Demenil mansion on a tour, and I looked down to Demenil Place, and there was this giant brewery there, and particularly the giant grain elevators are just such a landmark in South St. Louis that I had to know what the story was behind them, and I searched out, and I found the story behind them. I think that's, you know, you just want to know, like, why does this street have this weird name? And then you find out the answer, and it's really satisfying.
Yeah, it would be. What? Yeah, that is. The whole Lemp family, the story of Lemp, and it's been told many times, but you're going to tell it in a different way, I understand, in a book.
Yeah, so I'm really close friends with Stephen Walker. He wrote the seminal work on the Lemps, the haunting history back in 1988, 1989. And I love that book. It was really well done. It was the first book ever published on the Lemps. But I noticed that, you know, Stephen hadn't written a lot about Adam Lemp, who was the founder of the Western Brewery, which became the William J. Lemp Brewing Company. And I talked to Stephen, and, you know, he was really encouraging. He's like, yeah, go ahead, Chris, figure out what the heck is going on. What was the story behind Adam Lemp? And I just started digging. And one of the first places I start was at Bellefontaine Cemetery, which has this really user-friendly website where you can look and see, you know, who's buried in each burial plot. And I was always confused why Adam Lemp wasn't buried interred in the William J. Lemp mausoleum. And instead, he's buried in his own private plot with all, like, about 10 to 15 people, none of whom, except for his third wife, have the same last name as him. And I discovered this kind of late one night, and I went to bed just kind of turning this over in my mind. I'm like, who are all these people in Adam Lemp's burial plot? And why is he not buried with his son?
Right.
And it basically, one thing led to another. I started doing some research, particularly reading old German newspapers. There used to be, you know, three large German language newspapers in St. Louis. And I started, the story began to develop, and particularly I contacted some historians back in Germany. And the story developed of this sort of very troubled man. Adam Lemp almost certainly was an alcoholic. He abandoned his second wife, along with William J. Lemp Sr., who a lot of people in St. Louis have heard of. And he came to America basically to start over and basically just run away from his bankruptcies and this troubled life he left behind in Germany. And all of a sudden, he comes to America, and all of a sudden, he's successful. And then, I guess, kind of, sort of, William Lemp made up with his father. But I don't think his family ever really forgave Adam for abandoning their father. And next thing we know, we have this massive, gigantic brewery that at one point, for a short amount of time, was larger than Anheuser-Busch. But Anheuser-Busch passed them up pretty quickly. But still was one of the largest breweries in America. And it all began with failure, which, you know, the story of Anheuser-Busch begins with failure, too, of the Bavarian brewery, which, Eberhard Anheuser bought out of bankruptcy court.
Right.
But Adam Lemp is really fascinating. He gets sued all the time. He gets sued for dumb reasons. He sues other people for dumb reasons. And all of this is preserved in Missouri Secretary of State's records. And this very fascinating, very entertaining story develops. And so I wrote a book about it. It's in post-production right now. I'm hoping that it comes out in 2025. I've got some great people I'm working with to have it published. And hopefully you'll see it in stores, independent bookstores around St. Louis, and you should be able to buy it online. And I hope that people will find the story as interesting as I did. The people who've read it so far have found it to be interesting. And it's all part of what, you know, I hope to be more of kind of digging in deeper, less superficial study of St. Louis history.
Sure.
And just really digging deeper with, you know, particularly the German language sources. I think, you know, back in the day.
Chris, I hate to interrupt you, but we've got a break for news. Can you come back with us after the news? We can get you back on for a few more minutes.
Okay, yeah,
all
definitely.
Right, great. Chris Nofziger will be here. We're going to also, I just spoke with Peter Mayer in the Washington, D.C. area. He's going to be with us in the next hour. You're listening to KMOX.